Good afternoon, everybody. This is the session for the scheme update for ACT and New South Wales Workers' Comp. We will start with ACT. We've got Bill Smith, who has over 10 years' experience working in various workers' compensation and work health safety policy roles across the Commonwealth and ACT public service. Bill is currently the senior manager of the regulatory policy branch within the Workplace Safety and Industrial Relations Division of the Chief Minister, Treasury and Economic Development Directorate.
Yes.
In this capacity, he oversees the delivery of ACT government's industrial relations, workers' compensation and work health safety agenda. In addition to his duties as senior manager, Bill is the territory's representative on Safe Work Australia's strategic issues groups for workers' compensation and work health and safety, and chairs its permanent impairment coordinating committee. Please welcome Bill.
Thank you, everyone. I guess we've been coupled today, ACT and New South Wales, so biggest and smallest, so smallest is away. So just a quick overview, ACT, a little bit unique. We've got a private sector workers' compensation scheme. Our public sector workforce pays a premium to Comcare, so the Commonwealth insurer. But in terms of the private sector scheme, probably underwritten with self-insurance, about 16,500 policies, $8.2 billion in wages. We've got seven approved insurers, seven self-insurers. There's no interest, so essentially we have a hybrid statutory no-fault scheme with the option of pursuing common law damages. There is no threshold in place for pursuing damages in the ACT. Generally short claim duration with lump sum focus, so redemptions, pre-court settlements. Premiums, currently the achieved insurer premium rates are 11% lower than the independent actuary's reasonable scheme rate. This is largely due to competitive nature of the territory's insurance market, with insurers reluctant to pass on higher costs to employers in order to maintain market share. We're seeing a slight shift away from that at the moment, though. So in terms of the average scheme rate, it's around 2.6% of wages. It's been increasing consistently since 13-14, but we had a 5% reduction in 17-18, so that was down from 2.7 to 2.58. Badly timed mint, sorry. Policy developments. We have, in May 2016, the ACT passed legislation which expands lifetime care and support to cover catastrophic workplace injuries sustained by private sector workers in the ACT. The new scheme commenced on the 1st of July 2016. The expanded lifetime care and support scheme gives effect to the ACT's commitment to establish an NDIS scheme that meets the agreed national minimum NDIS benchmarks. There is an ACT Lifetime Care and Support Commissioner, but claims management and administration is carried out by New South Wales Lifetime Care and Support Authority. Insurers and self-insurers are levied to fund that Lifetime Care and Support Scheme. There is currently some legislation in the Legislative Assembly to increase statutory death benefits significantly, so from $220,000 up to about $540,000. There's a decision to align with the Comcare scheme, so that creates equity between all ACT workers, public sector and Commonwealth. We've also made a decision to align age restrictions with the Commonwealth age pension. We had cut-off issues, so this access to weekly benefits after the were cut off at 65 years of age, and as the Commonwealth pension age increases, there was a chance that people could have been without payment for a period of 6 months and increasing up to 2 years. And we've also decided to adopt the Safe Work Australia list of occupational diseases. So that was an important piece of work undertaken by Safe Work Australia to modernise the deemed diseases in Australia, the occupational related diseases. In February 2015, the ACT government announced its intention to shift away from the Comcare scheme and instead design a new scheme for ACT public sector employees. However, following extensive consultation with staff and unions and other stakeholders, the government has concluded that it's in its best interests of ACT public sector employees are served by remaining in the Comcare scheme and pursuing the possibility of becoming a self-insurer within the scheme. Graphs. So our estimated non-nil and lost time claim frequency rates per $1 million wage for 2015-16 were lower than previous years, continuing a downward trend. The scheme actuary adopted frequencies for 2017-18 policy years slightly above 2015-16. Gross payments in 15-16 were $123 million, which was 7% lower than the previous year. This was largely driven by lower lump sum payments in the ACT, so fluctuation in common law lump sum payments is usually the largest driver of cost pressures within the ACT. Although the average settlement size and the number of claims receiving lump sum payments reduced relative to the previous year, they remained at higher levels than for all years previous to 13-14. We copped it a little bit in 13-14. This experience is illustrated in the claim payments chart. Note in particular the increased cost of common law payments, which are the yellow segments, in the period since 2011-2012. So what we've got in the ACT now is the new normal average cost for lump sum payments. It's settled around $140,000 or $150,000. So, given we're such a small jurisdiction, we do have a couple of key industries that drive scheme cost. The main one is the construction industry. So the construction industry is historically overrepresented with 10% of scheme wages, but about 20% of total claims. 20% of total claims. A number of workplace deaths and a high number of serious injuries in the construction industry during 2012-13 prompted an inquiry into safety compliance in the ACT construction industry. The resultant Getting Home Safely report led to an increased focus on safety and compliance in the industry in the years following. So the government has worked collaboratively with industry to implement the 28 recommendations arising out of the report, and in 2012-13 there were 540 lost time claims reported in the industry. We saw a significant reduction in LTIs immediately following the report's release, so significant compliance work and blitzes were undertaken by the regulator in the ACT. However, we're starting to see the numbers slowly trending up. So At the time these slides were printed, there was under 400 lost time injuries in 15-16, 16-17. However, they're now ticked over the 400 mark and are a little bit higher than we'd like. The government recently reviewed the status of the recommendations coming out of the report and assessed the state of the current safety culture in the sector. The safety culture assessment was undertaken by RMIT University. In completing this work, extensive engagement with the construction industry was undertaken. This report has been publicly released by the Minister and is available on the Access Canberra website. So just a couple of takeaways from the survey. The survey found that for all aspects of the work health safety climate, upper level management had the most positive view of WHS climate in their organisations, and frontline workers had the least positive view. So that kind of franks a couple of assumptions that we had. RMIT suggested that this pointed to a disconnect between the perceived emphasis placed on WHS in construction organisations. Some other findings. There has been cultural improvement in levels of injury incident reporting since 2012, and there is a stronger support for worker safety than previously. However, the industry culture in relation to protection of worker health is perceived not to have kept pace with the improvement in safety. In particular, work-family balance and mental health were identified as significant problems for construction workers. It was also a common observation that people who work for companies employing between 100 and 199 people had the least positive view of the work health safety climate in their organisation. This was went against our assumptions. We thought it would have been the smaller to medium organisations and residential construction. However, it came back to show that it was larger commercial construction projects. A reason for that, the survey found, was the changing nature of employment, so more subcontractors and less direct employment from construction companies was leading to reduced levels of satisfaction in that area. So where to from here? The RMIT report and its suggestions for improving the safety culture in the industry will form the basis for the post-getting home safely strategy for the ACT construction industry. To this end, key stakeholders are already working collaboratively with government to roll out the new strategy in early 2018, and we've got significant commitment from the ACT government in that respect. So, any questions? You've got a question.
I've got a question. So, as the chair, I was Googling what question I would ask, and the first thing I found was an article, Canberra, most dangerous place for construction workers. But then further on, I read also two other industries that seem to have high rate of claims, and it's healthcare and retail.
Yep.
So can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, for sure. So those figures, as bad as they are, they're taken from the Safe Work Australia Comparative Monitoring Report. It does show that our construction industry is the worst performing in the country, and also points to where the worst performing in terms of health and community sector as well. The only disclaimer we usually use, so Safe Work Australia data is very important and allows us to compare ourselves and our performance with other states and territories. However, the definition they use for serious injury, it's a claim that's taken more than 7 days of work, 7 days off work. Essentially, that can point to the capacity of workers' compensation schemes to get the workers back to work as quick as possible. What we do have in the ACT, the high level of common law claims, and anecdotally we're seeing that people involved in those common law claims are encouraged not to return to work as quick as we'd hope. The definition of the serious injury within the Safe Work Australia report does pick up on those return to work rates and the ability of schemes to get their workers back to work as soon as possible. So you usually see the best performing serious injury rates can actually come from the best performing schemes who get their workers back to work as quick as possible within that 7 day period. So we take that with a grain of salt because there's still an injury that's occurred there. We're also mindful that we have to get the workers back to work better and look at some scheme changes to do so. In terms of scheme changes, other than the ones that I've identified, there's none on the horizon. The ACT is currently looking at reforming its CTP scheme, so we're giving the CTP people a little bit of breathing space while they try and reform their scheme, which is a significant piece of work in the ACT.
Bill, a line question. Yes. Does cross-border gaming affect claims performance, particularly in the construction sector? And would that contribute to ACT being a standout?
Yeah, so we're seeing significant, so anecdotally, and we're also seeing some more evidence of that now. For those who aren't aware, we've got a border town, Queanbeyan, and a lot of construction work that is occurring over the border. The difference in terms of the premium rate between New South Wales and the ACT is about 150%. So we are seeing some companies set up in Queanbeyan, but also do a majority of their work in the ACT. That is affecting scheme performance because that money's not going into the premium pool and it's driving up the average premium rate. We're seeing that leakage. We have to start working closer with our New South Wales colleagues. We do so through HAUCA, and we do lead a lot of initiatives through HAUCA. But the legislation, the changing nature of work, the structure of construction, the setup of construction companies is just making it very difficult for us to be able to regulate in that space. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Our next speaker is Dr. Rhys Bolland. He's been practicing in the area of consumer protection, corporate and financial services law for 17 years, both in private practice and within the government. He has written widely in the field, focusing in recent years in consumer protection regulation, particularly in the financial services industry. Previously, he was Acting Assistant Commissioner Policy and Strategy for the New South Wales Fair Trading, and prior to this, Senior Manager Consumer Policy with the Australian Securities and Investments Commission. Dr. Bolland teaches company law and banking law at Sydney and Monash Law Schools. He has a PhD in financial services regulation and a master's degree in both law and business. His current role is Executive Director of Workers' Compensation and Home Builders Warranty at the State Insurance Regulatory Authority of New South Wales. Please welcome Dr. Bolland.
Thank you. Thank you for having us this afternoon. There's a CTP session with some of my colleagues up the hall, so I'm competing with the other New South Wales team. CIRA, as you would have heard from the plenary session as well, is the regulator of compulsory insurance schemes in New South Wales, CTP, workers' comp and home warrant insurance, home building compensation insurance. We have a role in a couple of small schemes around firefighters, emergency services, sporting injuries and things. So I'll try to get through these and we'll have a bit of time for questions at the end as well. So like Bill, a couple of graphs to show where the New South Wales scheme is up to. So you can see the split of insurers by reference to premiums and also by reference to claims. Feel very free to come up towards the front. We have plenty of seats up here if the graphs are a bit small. So ours is an interesting hybrid scheme for those who aren't as familiar with the New South Wales scheme. We've got two large government insurers, iCare, which administers the nominal insurer. That's 75% of our market. They also administer the Treasury Managed Fund, which is government agencies, health, Attorney General's, Justice, Police, Education, that sort of thing. So they're the two largest participants. At the moment, we have six specialised insurers in our market, Guild, Catholic Churches, Hospitality Employers Mutual, and so on. And last count, we had 56 self-insurers. So that's kind of our market spread, in a slightly unusual combination. In home building, we currently have one government insurer, and come January, that market will open up to private participants. So I can tell you next year how that went. And CTP, they're down the hall. So if you were interested in that one, you'd be down the hall probably. So that gives you a bit of a sense where we are in terms of both claims and premiums. The spread is slightly different depending on whether you're looking at premiums or claims. You can see that TMF, the Treasury Managed Fund, is slightly overweight on claims. They do have emergency services and some of those parts of government that do, by their nature, involve some high-risk occupations. Some other key stats that the team prepared for you today, and I'm sure you can get the slides later. You can see the number of workers covered by the schemes. You can see latest stats in terms of dollars in and out. You can see trending the right way in terms of return to work rates at 13 and 26 weeks. Bill's already mentioned the slight differential in premiums relative to wages either side of the ACT border, and it's tracking down around 1.5% roughly, the percentage of wages. And efficiency rate is not up there on the graph. It is around the 70 cents mark. It has gone down a little in terms of cents and the dollar return to injured workers, but it's still kind of on par with what you can see in the national average in the Safe Work Australia reports, but a little bit of an area of further work for us perhaps. So they're the latest stats. I can come back to them at the end if you want to ask more questions about the statistics. Being actuaries, you may want to. Mention a couple of things in terms of developments legislatively and what we're doing as the regulator in New South Wales. So some of you would know CIRA has been a standalone regulatory agency for about 2 years. So before then, we were WorkCover in New South Wales, which was both the health and safety regulator, the insurance and care provider, and the regulator of workers' comp. And those three agencies are now three separate agencies in our space. Since then, so since that change in September 2015. We've had to review a number of parts of our rules, regulations and so on, as we focus on the role of being the regulator, not the actual scheme provider. One area that we have just completed a review in is our regulation of self-insurers. So as I said, about 56 self-insurers in our market. That is growing, and by the number of queries we're getting, that may still grow a little bit more yet. We've reviewed all of the policy, license conditions and so forth in the self-insurer space. That took about 2 years. Actuarial reports, roundtables, workshops, stakeholder events, discussion papers and all that sort of thing. Final package is now being published on our website if you're interested in the detail, and our self-insurers participating in our market are currently transitioning to a new set of license conditions. Some of them have already made the jump, the rest will by the end of this year, so over the next 2 months. Something new for us is introducing a tiered licensing model for our self-insurers. So we have published a set of performance metrics for self-insurers, expectations around claims management, quality of data, timing of responding to claims, communication with clients and the like, return to work rates. We've published metrics at a low, middle and high level, and our portfolio managers are meeting with each self-insurer to take them through where the statistics would put them relative to those metrics, and our self-insurers will all end up with a tiering low, medium, high, depending on how they go against those metrics. We're not publishing that just yet. That's something that we're still having a conversation with the self-insurers. It is a deliberate attempt to drive higher performance and to drive performance above mere compliance. So we have deliberately set the metrics as more than just complying with the letter of the law, trying to drive towards best practice. It is a new initiative. We would like to roll it out more broadly than just our self-insurers, but this is the first cohort to have this experience. So we're looking forward to seeing how that plays out in our market. We inherited a premium supervision model from the former WorkCover. Last year we had a CIRA-specific set of market practice and premium guidelines, and the file and write model is now operative for workers' comp insurers in our market, obviously not for the self-insurers, but for iCare, the nominal insurer, and for our six specialised insurers, the file and write system now applies. We had, to be fair, mixed feedback on the first year of file and write of those premiums, particularly from small to medium businesses, about the level of volatility in premiums in their experience and about perceptions of how transparent or not transparent the premium setting model was for them. We're in the process now of consulting on revisions to those guidelines, and early next year we'll publish a revised set of market practice and premium guidelines, hopefully addressing some of the issues that concerned small to medium business in our market around volatility, around transparency of pricing, and also we're going to publish some expectations for the first time on market practice, so market conduct, advertising practices, promotional practices, having website calculators and other forms of creating greater transparency around pricing. So hopefully the experience of the businesses of New South Wales will continue to improve around premium setting. It's a compulsory product. There's always, notwithstanding net promoter scores and things like that we talked about this morning, there's always a degree of dissatisfaction about a compulsory product, but we think we can do better in small to medium business, particularly their experience of the scheme. Those who are from New South Wales or have got an interest in the New South Wales scheme would be aware one of our more challenging pieces of law reform of recent times has been Section 39. Other jurisdictions have had a version of this before, but for us this is a cap for 5 years of the benefits that somebody below 20% whole person impairment can be on weekly benefits for. Like I said, other jurisdictions have had this in place for a while. It is new for New South Wales. The legislation was passed in late 2011, 2012 started, 2017 the five-year cap's about to hit. So in our part of the world, a big focus over the next couple of months is the 4,100 or so injured workers who will be ceasing benefits on our scheme. Relative to the number of people on the scheme at any one time, it's about 80,000 open claims at any one time. 4,000 might not seem like an enormous number, but for this particular cohort, many of them in their 50s, many of them in regional New South Wales, many have been on the scheme for 12 years on average, so some of them much longer than that. This is quite a difficult cohort that we're helping through this this period at the moment. So this is a big focus for us just now. We did publish some revised guidelines on return to work earlier this year. So there's just a little bit of information where there's that. That's in a transitional phase at the moment. They took effect May 2017. Employers in New South Wales have 2 years to adapt to the new return to work guidelines, return to work policies they need to have in place, a return to work coordinator for large businesses, and so on. I'm just going to give you two slides on some upcoming work that you may be interested in, and then we can have time for questions. We are reviewing, as I said, the full set of guidelines that we inherited when CIRA was formed 2 years ago. We are in the process of a review of about 10 of those guidelines, and that will form the basis of a claims administration manual that we'll publish and consult on next year. We've just finished, as I said, a review of our self-insurance framework. The next group that we will look at is specialised insurers. I mentioned already we're doing a review of our market practice and premium rules. That'll be go out in consultation any day now, as soon as our board signs off on that, and we expect to have a revised set of market practice and premium guidelines at the start of next year. If you were here for the main session, you would have heard Carmel talk about our dispute resolution review. So our minister has announced a review of what is a fairly complex dispute resolution system in New South Wales. It involves a merit review service that a part of my organisation, CIRA, runs, an ombudsman, a workers' comp commission, and a small number of cases that end up in court as well. Parliamentary committee that looks over us from time to time has recommended a one-stop shop. There's fairly broad support for that amongst stakeholders, less agreement about the details and who ought to manage the one-stop shop, but we'll be working through that. There'll be a discussion paper out in the next few weeks for those who are interested in dispute resolution matters. One advantage of forming CIRA as an integrated personal injury regulatory agency is we have a much stronger and more focused compliance and enforcement team. For those who follow CTP, we've had a lot of work in CTP fraud this year, a strike force with New South Wales Police, and we've had a good amount of success there in finding some serious leakage in the system there. In the workers' comp space, we've just finished an audit around uninsured employers, and we found, particularly in the hospitality and the building construction area, some targeted work in particular suburbs that we had intel on, a fairly high degree of non-insurance. So we'll be responding to the employers that we found there, and the next performance audit we'll be doing on the sector is in the claims handling area. So we'll be taking a selection of files from across our insurance cohort and reviewing claims handling, both the processing of the claims and the appropriateness of the outcomes for the workers concerned. That's an important one. We get a lot of intel from complaints. We got a lot of intel from dispute resolution. A number of our insurers have Net Promoter Score type survey instruments at the moment. We also think it's important that we are doing some proactive dip sampling and auditing of our own. As the introduction said, my background's in financial services regulation, ASIC and other places. Our experience there was while consumers may have been quite happy with their service, objectively they didn't necessarily get the service that they paid for. The statistics in the financial advice space are quite frightening on that, the percentage of people who think they get good advice versus those who actually do. So it's important that we do some expert sampling of the experience of participants in the scheme, not relying purely on whether they complain or express dissatisfaction or not. So complaints handling, data and digital, been mentioned a couple of times today. Like any modern regulator, we are investing heavily in building our data and digital presence. Our new CTP scheme starts in 2 weeks. We've invested a lot in modern, high-tech, you know, close to real-time ingestion and data analytics framework, and we'll be doing similar in home building, which is our next scheme, which starts in January, and then we'll modernise our workers' comp data and digital architecture as well. And one of my colleagues are speaking later in the session, but I've got a priority at the moment in looking at how we manage psychological injuries both in the prevention and recovery space. I'll leave it there. I've got some time for questions. There's a mic here and a mic there, so either large voice or... So we've started that journey and we've got a little way to go. So one of the teams in CIRA is our merit review service. That's a particular category of dispute, without going into technical details around work capacity issues. We've launched an online dispute resolution service there, so you can go onto our website. You can even do it on your phone, fill in the details, take a snap of any relevant documents, upload them to us, and we've got a customer relationship type software product in the background, which is managing those and interacting with the worker and employer, insurer, whoever it might be. So we've started that journey. We need to do similar sorts of things for our other dispute resolution categories as well. Depends a little bit on where the broader ministerial review of dispute resolution ends up, but I think almost wherever the one-stop shop is located, that we'll need a version of that.
Hi. There's a lot of media attention around Section 39 coming up in December, people receiving the last pages before Christmas. What's the sense around CIRA that the government may take an about face and make a last minute change, because it's not unheard of in New South Wales?
Look, good question. You're not the only person to ask. We were before a parliamentary committee last week, and the minister was also before another parliamentary committee last week. We're getting that question most weeks. The minister and the government are adamant that it won't change, that this was a decision that Parliament made in late 2011, took effect start of 2012, that while it's very challenging for those involved, there has been a fair bit of time to work towards this. Obviously, I'm subject to Parliament. If Parliament changes its mind, then we'll respond to that as it happens. But at the moment, there's all the information we're getting is full steam ahead. Sure, big voice. Oh, yep.
Thanks for the presentation. You didn't mention retro rating and what's the future of that. The reason I put it that way is that the analysis I've done in the last few years with self-insurance retro and the full insurance is that retro rating is only a little bit more expensive than self-insurance, which suggests that retro rating is too cheap.
It's too cheap?
Too cheap for eye care, that you're not really properly covering the risk of it.
Look, that's a good question. I can chat afterwards if you want. The self-insurance creates a little bit of a competitive pressure in the system. All of the insurers are responding to that, not just iCare. That is iCare's response. The other insurers are all trying to respond somehow to the cost savings that goes with being a self-insurer. Once you're over the threshold of those who are allowed to be a self-insurer in terms of number of employees and things, part of the premium review is making sure that premiums are neither too high nor too low. So yes, that has been mentioned in the consultation process. It is an issue we need to work through. So it's in our interest that the premiums are sustainable.
Can you give us any insight into the sort of challenges and issues you faced as a relatively new regulator in a scheme that's had quite a bit of change, 2012, 2015, separation of all of the agencies? What have been the key challenges in the last couple of years?
Look, I confess I've been in the department for 5 years. I've been in CIRA just since March. So my observation is that the relative to the other parts of CIRA, the Workers' Comp Party is probably more stable. So as I said, we've got a major new CTP scheme starting in 2 weeks. We've got a new home building compensation scheme starting in about 6 weeks. Compared to that, our Workers' Comp area is probably the slightly more stable. Looking at the cycle, talking to the team, we do have reasonably substantial legislative change or law reform about every 3 years. Those have been around it longer than me. Clearly, you could see that over a number of cycles. We're about to go into a pre-election cycle, so I'm expecting probably there won't be a huge amount of law reform for workers next year, but depending on what policies each of the parties take to the election, there might be some more after that. So it's been a pretty exciting time, actually, for CIRA. So we have elements of a start-up agency. You heard David Bowen talking about the start-up phase for NDIA earlier today. So while the Motor Accidents Authority and WorkCover and Fair Trading in relation to the home building scheme have been around for a long while, we as an agency are pretty young. We're still talking a lot about strategy, culture, what our regulatory approach should be in 2017 with the circumstances that we face. So for us, it's quite an exciting stage to set ourselves up and talk about what our long-term strategy and approach are going to be, taking the history that we bring from each of those predecessor agencies, our value in putting CTP workers, home building together is we can learn from each of the schemes. So the two new schemes that are coming online over the next month and a half have borrowed a little bit from each other, and the workers' scheme will have the chance then of borrowing some of the learnings from that as well.
Could I ask you to thank Bill and Rhys for their presentations?